my DTS, DTL or Villa Millennials Anonymous Affiliate Fairy. I need you.
Hey.
I just got sucked back into the 1980s with my favorite 80s break group in a magical...
Let me guess, a DeLorean.
No, a Razor Scooter. Wait, what? I need some hot Adidas wear. Now, can you help a sister out?
Okay. It's officially summer, and DTLR Villa has an exclusive offer to start the season off. Ending on July 6th, select Adidas apparel, or buy one, get one 50% off. All you gotta do is go to millennials.com/shop or Adidas BOGO, which 50% off using the code.
Come on, I always wanted to wear a gold chain, but we gotta hurry back, cuz...
Let me guess, Millennials Anonymous is on?
Yes, girl, yay!
Yeah, you know we run the world, right?
I'm saying in Tennessee, I know it's Texas.
That don't even sound like me.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the individual guest's own and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Millennials Anonymous or MAPS Media. The material and information presented here is for entertainment purposes only and not meant to malign any person, place, thing, or group. MAPS Media's name and all forms and abbreviation are the property of its owner, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition of any specific organization, product, or service. This is purely entertainment, folks. Now let's get it. Hey everybody, welcome back to a brand new episode of Millennials Anonymous Podcast. Yes, it is your girl, Lise Winnie, and I am a fucking millennial. Yes, and it is the 4th of July today. Everybody will be out celebrating cookouts and stuff, but it's just an interesting time for black people. And that's why I think around this time, usually starts reading What to the Slave is the 4th of July from Frederick Douglass. So, you know, because it still has some weight. Now, he actually did not read this on the 4th of July. He actually read it on July 5th. But you get the point. You know, that this is exactly how a lot of people in this country feel. We cannot ignore the fact that a lot of people feel slighted. When you have a country that was built on racism and sexism and every ism you've ever known, you gonna have some problems. Yes, we're gonna have some problems. It's not just gonna go away. Because the people that wrote the Constitution had children, and they had children, and then 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 more children, and children, children, children. And then you get till this point, right? That mentality just didn't die. It evolved. Now, we've gotten better. I know that some people would dare to say that that's not true, but we've gotten better. It's not quite the same. I'm not the person. If you came here to hear that this is the same thing we're going through now as what we went through, I wasn't there, but you get my point. Black people went through back in the 1800s, you came to the wrong place. I'm not about to equate the two. It's two very different. It's even different from what they went through in the 60s. This is 50s and 60s and 30s and 40s. It's different. We still have issues now, but it ain't that. But what I will say is that you cannot ignore what we went through as a nation. We went through a lot. You know, as a nation, in order to get here. And so that's why when you're looking at it, what to women is the 4th of July, especially this year? What to black people is the 4th of July? What to poor people is the 4th of July? What is it? That's all I'm saying. And that's why today we're going to talk to Bree Jefferson. And she is a social media, or I would say TikTok influencer, political influencer. She's also a law student, and she's been on campaigns. So she's been a campaign manager, and she's worked on different Democratic campaigns in different capacities. So we're going to be talking to her today, and she's going to talk about how we can engage the youth. Yes, the youth with an F, not youth, youth. Okay, because the youth out there, or you know, the younger folks, younger voters, don't typically vote. Like, they are more likely to protest. They're more likely to make calls for change, but less likely to vote. And I'm just telling you, protest is only the beginning. It's the first part. That's step one. You can't just do step one and be like, oh, I'm done. And now it feels like we're trying to collect stickers and badges of all the things that we are part of, all the movements, because it makes us feel good, but we actually don't get anything accomplished. You know, movements are not about how it makes you feel better as a human. It's about actually creating change. And so that's why today we're going to talk about that and how to engage those young people. You know, we're not proposing, but you get my point. You know what I mean? We need to get them involved. And then, you know, it's a lot of things that have been going on. We got some bombshells being dropped about the January 6th committee from Cassidy Hutchinson. So basically she sat down and she dropped them. She was straight outcast. Bombs over Baghdad. Yeah. She was doing all of that. She dropped clues, bombs. She dropped all of them. Okay, all of them. And we still have a country of people that have been like, but you know, where do we do this at? Where do we do this? Where it's just like, we have all of this information and it's like, but you know, he said he was gonna go, but you know, that can't be true. She's gotta be lying. He said it out of his mouth that he wanted to go and he was gonna meet them there. He said it. Now, what we're never going to see is a sitting or a former sitting United States president go to jail ever. That's why Nixon got pardoned by Gerald Ford. And we're going to see this just kind of go away. Because if we convict a former or sitting United States president, we as Americans would have to admit that we had a criminal that we put in the position of power. We made a mistake. And you're never going to see that happen ever. Just from the standpoint of optics. Like, we have people in this country that want to erase history. Like, we have the Constitution. We got it. We looking at it. When you look at the Constitution and Bill of Rights and all of that, it says it, that it was built on all the isms. What are you talking about? That's why you had to amend it to say, well, you know, women, I guess they're people, right? You know, maybe they're people. And black people, you know, they kind of were like, we said they was kind of like people, you know, because in the South, we wanted to make sure that we got more representation, but we ain't want them to handle rights. But, you know, maybe they are people. Like, you shouldn't have to go back and amend something if that's not what it was founded upon. Why are we doing this? Like, that's not, we have evidence, but, you know, facts don't matter. But I'm just saying, we're never going to see it. And when you're hearing the things that she's saying, again, this is her account. This is coming from her. He has not confirmed this. But when you hear that, it's kind of creep. Like, most people that sat down with the committee, he kind of really confirmed this, that he was a little, we know, like, the stuff that we knew was true. Like, they were just kind of like hiding this. The Republicans are trying to hide this. It's like, even the governor of South Dakota was on CNN talking to Dana Bash, and she was doing somersaults of lies to try to get around this and away from it. And I was like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Like, y'all are the party of lock her up. Y'all are the party of we are the party of law and order, except for when you commit treason. Like, that's okay. Treason is okay. You know, treason and finance fraud and whatever else he did. So we just keep our tab running because we don't know all the things that are going to come out yet. But this is just insane. And then, of course, you have with the Roe versus Wade, and we're still having this conversation, which is absolutely crazy that we have less rights, like I said last week, than our moms. This just should not be. And it's not about, and I had this conversation with Royce Massengill. I was on it's Faraji Muhammad. Shout out to Faraji Muhammad, by the way. The Culture, he has a show on Roland Martin's network, the Black Star app. So if you're Black Star Network, so if you want to see that, you can download the app in the Play Store, Google app, or whatever you have. And you can go to Roland Martin Unfiltered on YouTube and watch it. I actually hosted last week, Tuesday and Thursday, and then I will be hosting this Thursday as well. But on Tuesday, I spoke with Royce Massengill, and me and Royce go back, you know, a little while in this podcast game, and I had him on. We don't agree on anything. And of course, in perfect Royce and Lee's fashion, we didn't agree on that either. And his is more about the responsibility of it. Like, women need to be more responsible, and it's more on the woman than it is a man because y'all invite us in and all this other stuff. And I'm like, listen, Royce, no, it takes two people to have sex. And most men defer that responsibility off to the woman because they don't want to make it. Because the woman doesn't have a choice but to make a decision. The man doesn't. He can literally walk off and just not make a decision on the matter at all. The woman has to make a decision. She either has to come to terms with the fact that she's going to have the baby, which is a decision, or she can just say that I don't want the baby and terminate the pregnancy. She has a choice to be made. Now, it doesn't mean that women are more responsible for this, and it doesn't mean that when most women are out here using, I think that's also not true, like out here willy-nilly, because when you look at how many abortions were actually performed last year, medical abortions, it compared to how many women there are, it's not that big of a number. Most women aren't out here just getting abortions willy-nilly. First of all, it is not an easy procedure. Physically, it's not an easy, meaning that if you take the like that abortion pill, it's not a pleasant experience. So most people are not going to want to keep doing that. And we all have done things that we shouldn't have done. And we realize that, you know what? This is not going to be good for me right now. This is not going to be good for me. And if it's not good for me, it won't be good for the baby either. We've all been in situations. We cannot sit here and sit on our high horse and say that, oh no, we haven't. And no one is pro-abortion. No one's out there, yeah, pro-abortion. No one is pro-abortion. People are pro-choice. Pro-choice, not pro-abortion. Let's stop that too, okay? Let's get that straight out of the water, okay? No one is pro-abortion. But I believe that people should have rights. We are pro-choice. Pro-choice. And when you start taking, because it's amazing, just a couple months ago, just last year, y'all was talking about my body, my choice. Now you're like, fuck the body. It's the government choice. Like, can y'all make up y'all mind? Can we make up our minds about what is going on? You didn't want to wear a mask. My body, my choice. I don't want a vaccine. My body, my choice. Now it's like, fuck it. The government is choice. It's government choice. Not yours. It's not yours. It's not your choice. And then I'm like, what do you do with all of these babies? What do you do with them? What are you that people don't want? You want the baby to come to full term, but what do? Our foster care system is shit. Like, it's just shitty. Like, what do we, you just want to walk around creating broken people that we can't feed, we can't house, we can't care for? Because we don't have a lot of foster parents anymore. People aren't running to do that. So what do? We're not really thinking this through. And then you want to go after contraception now? This sounds like a trap. Like, okay. This is very interesting, especially given like somebody like Donald Trump, who said he was for pro-choice and then he flipped it, whatever. But we're seeing that, and we're also having issues with inflation. Everything is expensive. You get some clear heels when you go to the supermarket, because that's the only way you can pay for groceries these days. Rent is sky high. And of course, you know, we have to have the people that we absolutely do not need talking for us poorer folks at all talking, which is Jeff Bezos. And I'm like, you're not the one. Okay, maybe McKinsey, but you're not the one. Like, just be rich and be over there. Like, just leave us poor people alone. We seen what you did with Amazon. We seen what you did last summer. And we don't want it. Aww. We don't want it. Like, you know, get your Mr. Clean on over there. We don't want it. We don't want it over here. Okay? We don't want the United States of Amazon. Because first of all, y'all work the shit out of them, and you don't pay them, and you don't want them to unionize, and it be hot as fuck in there. Like, no, nobody, no, mm-mm, nope. If we need same day delivery, we'll call you, Jeff. But for now, we just need you to shut up. Shut up. Just shut up. Shut up. Just shut up. Shut up. Okay, I turned into the Black Eyed Peas real quick. We just need you to shut up. Go on, move more bridges. Like, I should move the mountain. Go on, move the bridges, okay? London Bridge is moving over for Jeff Bezos. Like, do that over there and just leave us alone. You already rich. Why are you angry? I don't understand. Like, just sit down. Just have several seats. Stadium full. Sit down, okay? Goodbye. We just gone. Get gone, sir. And then, you know, we're seeing Jalen Walker, and he had 60 wounds. Now, they don't know if they're all entrance wounds, or they're exit and entrance wounds. But we will find that out. But as of right now, it looks like there were at least 60 shots that hit his body, which is excessive. And we do need to do something about policing in this country. And I do believe that there is a solution to be had. And this is why it's good to do more than just hold up a sign. Because it seems like we kind of dropped the ball. It's like, okay, we're all engaged. Something happens. We're engaged. And then, poof. Nothing. Silence. Radio silence. Nothing. And then something else happens. And then we're back again. And like, oh, and we're back. Like, we can't keep doing this. Like, no, we can't keep doing this. We can't have this. Now, I will say this is definitely excessive. More information is coming out. So we'll see what happens with this one, but it seems excessive, even with the information that we already have. It seems excessive. And then we do need to do something about gun violence, because, like, we tend to, especially in the African-American community, we get up in arms when anything with a police officer or white person, but we seem to ignore when things happen in our own community. Because if you look at the amount of shootings that have taken place recently, especially in places like Baltimore, where I am from, not good. And we don't, it's almost like we have very few organizations out there. And then the organization that we do have, people don't really support it. You don't see people out there, you know, standing at City Hall, or, you know, we don't see any of that. And all of these crimes don't get prosecuted. Like, we had it was an 8-year-old that got shot and a 5-year-old that got killed in a drive-by in Houston. I don't know if they found out who did that. So, you know, that happened as well. Like, we do have a problem with guns in this country and policing and all of those things. And I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time, but we have to keep going. Like, we gotta keep going. We can't stop just because we feel like, oh, well, Essence Fest, you know, and then it's like, okay, Essence, and then we over there, you know, what, Girls Trip. Well, we gotta do it at the same time. Speaking of which, Essence Fest was pretty dope this year. I didn't get a chance to go. I have not gone to Essence Fest ever. And I keep saying that one year I'm gonna go, but we've been in a whole pandemic for like 79 years. And so I think it's finally starting to dissipate. So I think I'm gonna go to Essence Fest at some point and go down New Orleans. But one of the biggest things that have come out of Essence Fest was, I mean, Kamala was there. We found her. You know, hey, Kamala, she's back now. She's kind of been a little bit silent, but she's back now. Okay, so we saw her. And then we also were hearing about Nicki. People were talking about Nicki Minaj, and I think Nicki Minaj is one of the best female lyricists ever. I really do. I love a lot of her music. Don't agree with the choices. Don't agree with some of the stuff she believes. But I believe she's a great lyricist. Okay? She's a dope-ass lyricist, an artist, a musician. She's great. And honestly, I think she's a great radio personality and podcaster. I honestly think she's very, very good at that. Like, if she wanted to stop music and just do her radio show, she would be great. She really would be Queen Radio. Like, it was really entertaining. As much as I didn't agree with a lot of stuff she said, it's entertaining. That's like, I am a big Wendy Williams fan, which is also sad to see what's going on with Wendy Williams. I don't think Wendy is ready yet. She's talking about she's coming back for podcasting. I don't think she's quite there yet. And it's sad because, like I said, Wendy Williams is the reason why you see a lot of entertainment bloggers and podcasters. Like, she is definitely the pioneer of a lot of the things that we're hearing now, even though people don't want to give her credit because a lot of people don't like the way that she did things, but it is, she's one of the reasons. Just sad to see what's going on with her. But going back to Nikki, this, I don't know if it was the sound that was off, because like the video, the entrance video, intro video was amazing. Okay, that was dope. It was all that was giving, like the kids say, it was giving. But this, once we got to the performance, it was the sound for me. Like, I don't know if it was the reverb. I don't know if the sound guy need to get fired. I'm not sure what was going on there, because it was a little wonky. But other than that, I know people are also talking about her body, and we're not going to start shaming people. I don't know if she's pregnant or not. If she is, we will find out. If she's not, sometimes that happens. You get a little bloated. She down in New Orleans. She probably eating some beignets and stuff like that. Like, who? Hey, she looks good anyway. We not doing that. You eat a beignet. Eat two. Eat three. We have one life. Live your life and don't be worrying about what other people feel your body should look like. But the sound, we got to do something about the sound, Nikki. I'm just saying, the sound was a little off. But other than that, whatever. But let's get into this conversation. All right, so we have a guest today. We're going to be talking a little bit about young people in voting. I am a millennial, so I can't really claim young anymore. We're more like middle age, so I'm gonna defer the youngness to my next guest, who really has like the pulse of the young people. She is speaking out about a lot of the things that are going on TikTok and social media. We have advocate and also a grad student as well. And she's 5'4", but she has said she has that big energy. How are you doing today, Miss Bree?
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm doing well, you know, all things considered with what's going on in the world. But yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be on.
Awesome. So here's the thing. We have a lot of things that have recently happened. And overnight, we did get some gun regulation passed, bipartisan. But on the same token, Roe v. Wade is gone now. We do not have those protections anymore. Reproductive rights are not even just under attack. They have been assaulted. What is it? What do we need to do to make sure that young people are engaged? Because it seems like they're very active on social media, but when it comes to actually coming to the polls and seeing it connect, there's kind of a disconnect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, let's just define young people. You know, when in political terms, we are still young as millennials. I'm turning 31 next month. I don't feel like a young person. I wake up every day and I feel it. I feel 31 years old. But young people is defined as people that are under the age of 35. So we're still in there. And, you know, I think the first thing that I think about in this moment is allowing young people, allowing all of us to feel our feelings. We are under attack. We have every right to be upset. We have every right to be angry. We have every right to scream and to cry and to feel those feelings. And I think that we need to feel those feelings. I think we need to express that, right? And then kind of using that, I always tell people, remember this moment, remember how you are feeling, and think about what you can do to make a change. To me, as just a young Black woman who's worked in politics for years, I totally agree. You know, it's younger people are frustrated. We feel disengaged. We don't feel empowered because our systems are set up to make sure that we don't. And to me, it's like, okay, well, we have to get inside these institutions and then work to change the system. It is an inside-outside approach. I love all of the work that's been going on around social justice, around activism. And that to me is such important work. The other piece of the puzzle to me is changing the faces of who gets elected. Because at the end of the day, the majority of elected officials in this country are still old white men. Mm-hmm. They are not the majority of the population of this country. And it is time for us all to step into our own leadership and not only just vote, but decide that, you know, I can be an elected official. I can run for school board. I can run for Congress. I can run for president. Because again, you know, as somebody that's worked in these institutions for so long, let me tell you, you and I, your audience, all of us, We are more than qualified. We are actually way more qualified than people that are currently there. So I would say, you know, hold on to this moment, hold on to the anger, the sadness, use that as a motivator, a motivating faction, because at the end of the day, I really believe that if we were not making progress, we would not be dealing with the mess that we are dealing now. They are responding to the fact that we are powerful, and we need to remember that.
I do have a question for you, because that brings up a great point, and I want to get to your background. So explain to people, because you're only 31, and a lot of people are thinking that politics are for those who have a lot of experience, probably more educated. I think a lot of people aren't as fluent in what it actually takes. Yeah. So what's your background? Where have you, what campaigns, or where have you worked?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. So my background, I have loved politics my entire life. I just have been really interested, not only in politics, but in social justice. I feel really fortunate. My family really grounded me in Black political thought. Understanding the way that we have made progress in this country is by people that look like us, particularly Black women, stepping up and demanding change. So knowing that kind of just is my childhood, right? It's like, I feel like I didn't really have any other choice. It just feels like something that was always right. And, you know, I tell people my background is I went to a state school in Washington State. I'm from Seattle. I grew up in Seattle, Washington, born and raised.
Awesome.
And yes. And I tell people, you know, like people always think that you have to go to Harvard, you have to go to Yale, you have to decide when you're 5 years old that you want to be president and go to all these elite institutions. And that's not the case. And we actually need more people from diverse backgrounds that are coming into the political world. So I was a political science major in undergrad. I went to Western Washington University. And I really was not involved in like campus politics. I was never student class president. I never ran for any of that in high school, any of that in college. I had a professor who was an African American politics professor in my department. And there was this internship that was at the Washington State Legislature. And I remember I was in his office hours. We were talking about an exam, and he was just like, I haven't seen your application for this yet. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not doing this. I'm not working like at the legislature. What? And he really encouraged me to do it, and it changed my life. I was one of the 7 students that was chosen from my university, one of 30 in the entire state of Washington. And I went and I worked at the Washington State Senate for a legislative session as an intern. And, you know, I tell people it was the experience, that moment really changed my life. And it also showed me kind of what I wanted to do in these spaces. I remember arriving at the internship and being one of 2 Black women.
Oh, wow.
We're in the program for the entire state. And I just remember going back and crying because I was just like, what am I doing here? How did I wind up here? I don't belong here, right? And really having to find it within myself to kind of believe and keep going. Right? It's just like, that's kind of been like a theme for me throughout my life and my career, is just trying to open up space for other Black women. And that moment, I was just like, I'm, you know, if nothing else, I'm going to try to make sure that this just does not keep happening. I'll speed it up. And then from there, I was lucky enough, I worked at the legislature in Washington State for, we count it in sessions, which are legislative sessions when lawmakers, excuse me, are at the Capitol making laws. I did that for 5 sessions for around 5 years. And I went from an intern to a session aide, to a legislative assistant. And I wound up, my last position was as caucus staff. So I worked for the Senate Democratic Caucus as a public information officer, which is a fancy term for being a political speechwriter. So I wrote speeches and I did social media and just kind of any like public facing stuff for 5 Democrats that were in the Senate, as well as staffing the Members of Color Caucus. And then after that, I went to the Attorney General's office for Washington State. I ran a task force that was coming up with ways to reduce hate crimes in Washington when I was 28. And then in 2020, the murder of George Floyd, the uprising for Black Lives, I felt really drawn to community. I felt like I have all these tools that I have gained just working as an insider And I know that like one of the biggest problems for our community, the Black community in particular, is just like lack of access, that these institutions are so elitist that if you don't understand the inside, you don't understand like, okay, you can request a meeting, but you actually need to call like this senator's legislative assistant to get it instead of just sending an email, stuff like that, little insider stuff, right? Whereas like, okay, I need to take all of this that I've learned and go back out into community. And so I actually helped launch a nonprofit, a political nonprofit in Seattle that was focused on BIPOC civic engagement. And we actually did recruitment of trying to get BIPOC folks to run for office on the local and in the state level.
Like an Emily's List, but for like people of color. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. Specifically for progressive BIPOC folks. And, you know, I was really proud of the work that we did. The launched an endorsement board that was made up of almost entirely of Black women. It was all BIPOC folks. We asked people that we were endorsing to define what Black liberation meant like to them, define what safety without police meant like to them. And through that effort, we also were able to raise with other nonprofits in Seattle over $500,000 that we gave to BIPOC candidates all over the state.
Oh, wow. And that's awesome. Yeah. Is that how you got into social? Because you had the background in social media. And then in order for you to give it to people that aren't in the political arena, you had to bring it to the town hall where everyone is, which just so happens to be TikTok. A lot of younger folks and younger voters are on TikTok. Is that how the transition happened?
You know, the transition to TikTok was so funny because I did not go into it with any kind of plan. I was really, my sister had always sent me a bunch of TikToks and I was always like, what is this? And I don't understand it. And the more that I started seeing it, I really found out that it was a platform that could be used particularly like by Black folks to spread political information, to spread knowledge. I think what folks, particularly like older millennials, what we think about TikTok when we're not on it is like, oh, okay, it's little kids dancing. But there is just so much amazing information that is being spread, just like knowledge, communities that are being created. And so one day I just decided, I was just like, you know, I feel like maybe I have something to say. Maybe somebody will listen, maybe they won't. But I never went into it thinking that, oh, okay, I want to be TikTok famous. I want to be a content creator. It was more like, this is what's on my heart. This is what's on my mind. If that resonates with people, that's beautiful. And, you know, it has. It's just been a really fun, exciting new way to engage with a new audience.
So let me ask you, since you actually were working on a campaign in 2020, on the national level, should we replicate what was done? Honestly, I think it was the downfall of American, well, we were already going in a bad direction. But young voters resonated with that. They came out. We saw that it increased, like, what, 50% of young voters came out between the ages of 18 and 34, although they used really fear tactics, and it was just about all of this. It just wasn't as great as it should be. They were more voting against something than for something. Should we try to replicate that, or is there a better way to reach them?
Yeah, I think so. With campaigns too, I think that there are, we have the national campaigns, which people generally focus on and think about campaigns, but there's also the local campaigns, the local elections, and that's kind of where my bread and butter has been, where people think about like the president and Congress, don't necessarily understand that on the state and local level, your state legislature is your state Congress. Your governor is like the state president, right? And you'll have all these local positions. So on the national level, yeah, I definitely feel like it was motivating by, okay, we're just going to stop whatever is happening because this is too much. And we can't, we can't replicate that because there's no Trump that's the boogeyman anymore. And just quite frankly, like, you know, I've worked with the Democratic Party, but I will always be the first to say the Democrats are horrible at messaging. They're horrible at getting people excited, especially like young people. You're not giving us any hope for the future besides saying like, okay, the Republicans are racist. So really your only option at this point is to go with us. And that's not a motivator at all. On the local level, you know, I think 2020 replicating some of that is really good. You know, in Washington State, we saw historic numbers of Black and brown people, young people running for office for the first time. There were over 3,000 BIPOC candidates who ran for local office all over the state. And just like, so you understand, in Washington State, where I grew up, the population is less than 5% Black.
Wow.
But after the 2020 election, we have 2 Black senators and we have 6 Black members of the House. There's like a Black caucus for the first time. So like ever? We are making ever, right? Because
wow.
There's never been that much kind of representation. And so to me, that's just saying like, we are out there and those folks are so amazing. I've had a chance to work with so many of them. So amazing, so inspiring. And they really have been running campaigns of like inspiration, of showing like the future of not only politics, but like of what we want the world to look like. And 3 of my best friends from back home, I live in DC right now, three of my best friends from back home are all elected officials now. They all, well, 2 of them. One is about to be. The last one, she's running right now, but like, she's going to win her race. I'm knocking on wood, I feel like.
And what's her name?
But Charlotte Mena.
Okay, there you go.
Charlotte Mena in Tacoma, Washington. Go support her. She is a amazing woman of color, Mexican American, first generation. She worked for Congress. She worked for the governor of Washington State. Incredibly qualified. Kind of just like the exact kind of person that you want. We have this whole new lineup of like young Black and brown women who are just like, yeah, I can do this. And I should do this. I'm more than qualified and really trying to inspire and step into leadership that way. So,
do you think that there's a fraction? The Democratic Party is divided. So have the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and then you have like the moderate or conservative wing. Mm-hmm. Well, I would actually say it's actually probably broken in 3. So you have your progressives, then you have your moderates, and of course, you have your Joe Manchins of the world. So there's a big divide in between young and old as well, where you have the progressives are going up against the Democrats and people are calling you guys the woke left. Do you think that that's because a lot of people were saying that's where the Democrats' downfall was? They went too far left. Do you feel that, or do you think that this is just fear of change, or what's your thought on that?
I was laughing because I hear that all the time. That's been, for me, just like some of the biggest pushback that I've faced just from the party, from elected leadership. It's a fear of change. It is a generational divide. It's a not understanding of the realities of the demographics of this country as well. So a lot of that comes from saying, oh, you know, well, just turnout. People don't, young people, people of color don't turn out. Our polling shows that they're like not interested or engaged. Well, number one, polling in the United States is still mostly done through landlines.
Okay.
Because it is illegal in a lot of places to get get cell phone numbers to poll people. Who has landlines?
Old white people.
Right. So all of our polling information is being skewed towards that demographic, number one. So for me, I'm just like, okay, I don't care what you have to say about that, because that's not a representation. I've been polled. I've worked in Democratic politics since I was 22 years old, and I have been polled twice.
Wow. Okay.
Right. So it is not representation of people that are actually engaged. And number two is people aren't going to show up because you're not giving them any reason to. You're not exciting them. You're not welcoming. And I think, you know, the last thing is that it's hard for people to give up power, because a lot of this is going to require, a shift in power and a shift to giving folks, us young people, the reins. And I think that that's just, it's a lot of protecting these same things because it's going to require people to give up certain things. So no, I don't think that the Democrats have gone too far to the left. I think that that is just such an easy out from confronting the realities that like people want something more than what we are giving them. And okay. Also, you know, just my last point on this, because I could really, I'm like, okay, let's not go on a complete rant here. But you know, it's like, to me, as a Black woman too, I'm like, I'm not going to compromise with people who don't believe that I have a right to exist. So like, why are you telling me that what I'm asking for, which is basically just my basic dignity and human rights, why are you saying that that's too extreme? What are you really saying when you say that?
I could see that. And when you're saying they're not giving anything, and I agree with you, I couldn't agree with you more that the Democrats are horrible at messaging, but I think that's part of because they have a bigger base. So Republicans, guns, Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all they have to play to, guns, Jesus. Now, Democrats have to kind of, you know, play to the Black vote, which is incredibly important to a lot of their campaigns are Black people, which a lot of times we don't get. I think we get them in office, but don't necessarily get the outcome that we deserve. Mm-hmm. You have women, Democrats are, you know, have a big female base. You have the LGBTQ plus community. Those are all things that have to be kind of like brought in. You have the Latin folks that are also a big part of the Democratic base. How do you appease everyone and actually get a message across? Like if you are talking to Democratic politicians out there, state, local, or national, how do they reach everybody without kind of forgetting or neglecting someone and actually having a real message? Is it possible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the biggest struggles, right? It's that we are a big tent party. I still, even, you know, after me saying all this about the Democratic Party, I'm still a registered Democrat. We are a big tent party. And I think it's shifting, though, just the who you are trying to reach. Because right now, kind of like the framing that I've seen, both on the national level, but also just from talking to people within the Democratic Party, is there is still this idea that in order to win, especially on statewide elections, on national elections, you have to reach out to blue collar, white working class voters.
Right.
And that even though there is this idea that everybody that you just mentioned, again, for me, it goes back to, okay, but we don't really have to appeal to you because your other option are Republicans, and we know that you're not going to
voters have jumped ship. We're seeing them leave in like greater numbers to the Republican Party, and they're not offering them anything. That's interesting.
I think that it is. It's interesting. There is, I think, a split that within the Latinx, like the Latino Hispanic community, and it is a generational thing. It's also a cultural thing. I think that people don't necessarily break down the fact that a lot of that split is coming from folks who are Cuban immigrants, like particularly like in Florida, or folks that are from border communities in Texas. Like a person that is a first or second generation Cuban immigrant is going to have a very different perspective that lives in like Florida. Lives in like the Southeast, very different perspective than somebody from like Washington State. That also Washington State has a very, very large Latino population.
Does it
and
really?
A lot of it does. There really? Are counties in Washington State where it's over 50% Latino because they're half of the state are farms. And so there's a huge migrant worker community here. And most of those folks are liberal. Like my best friend who I was just talking about, she comes from one of those communities and is super, super progressive. So I think that there's like there's a breakdown within like identity that's not necessarily being parsed out. But I think some of it is like Republicans do try to appeal based on religious issues as well. And I think like Democrats, we have not done a good job offering, back to like your main point about like, what can we do, right? I don't think that we offer a story. We offer policies. Okay. It's like, okay, we're going to pass this policy. But we don't offer just like a story for what we are trying to create. We don't offer that. Like, we are trying to build a multicultural, multiracial a coalition, a community that's like based on equality. Mm-hmm. We have a really hard time telling that story because we're so focused on like individual policy issues, as well as just being like, well, we're not Republicans. And that's just not, that's really not good enough for people anymore. Particularly like, you know, it worked in 2020. It's not going to work this year. And I don't think it will work in 2024.
I think Democrats are going to get ransacked. I am very concerned about what it's looking like in elections. And when you're talking to people, it's not looking good because of the economy.
Yeah.
Democrats can't address it. They're not doing a very good job of talking about it. It seems like their focus is more so. And I think January 6th is, I think that that's very, very important. We do need to do something about that.
Yeah.
But it seems to be the primary focus. And when you are, because to be completely 100, I am a grandma, mom, millennial, so I am older, or slightly older than you. And I am a moderate. I am not a progressive.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at this from how do we keep the party intact? How do we get young people involved? Because I think we do need more young people. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a disservice if the Democratic Party split. I think the progressives are needed just as much as the moderates and some of the conservatives, as much as Joe Manchin has driven me insane. But we do need to figure out a way that the issues matter. You said, what issues should young people really be getting involved in? What issues are you seeing that it's like, this is a red flag. We need to be paying attention to it. It's going to be impacting us.
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing, especially for folks younger than me, I've seen, it's really around the environment and the climate crisis that we are dealing with. And I think that an opportunity, particularly like bring it back to the economy for Democrats, is talking about the fact that like this is an issue that we will have to deal with. And while we are wasting time right now even trying to agree that this is a real thing, there are countries all around the world that are spending a lot of money on innovation, because there has to be innovation in order to deal with it. So all this time that we could be spending right now trying to make sure that the American economy can work through the climate crisis while also like bringing in jobs, bringing in future leaders of that for economic growth, we are kind of just like walking around, I feel like, in a circle. We're kind of just like chasing our tail and having the same conversation. So kind of like reframing it. I think for me, I really think about the conversations I have with my friends around just housing.
Okay.
The fact that so many of us don't think that we will ever really be able to afford a home. You know, when I left Seattle, Washington, I remember I walked by a house and it was for sale. It was a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house, an older house. And it was, the listing price was $785,000.
Wow. Wow.
Right. What does that say, right? Like, so focusing on housing affordability, focusing on programs that really like help people in our age range, our income bracket, afford homes, but also, again, doing innovation to make sure that we are building enough homes, because that's like also a huge problem with housing. So housing, climate.
Yes. Are student loans on the radar of young
people? That's the next one. That was exactly the next one. And I think that that really divides too, I think, between Gen Z millennials and then like older millennials, right? Where I think a lot of younger people are just like, all of them should just go away.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm just like, you know, I would love to just get the money that Joe Biden said and that what he was campaigning. That would be great. Right. And then
also the 10,000 would be okay for you. And
the 20, it was 20,
50. It was 20. Okay.
Yeah, it was 20. Ideally, I would love 50. But I understand some of the reasoning behind why not. And I'm like, 20, I think that's like a step in the right direction. 20, I think, paired with making sure that loan repayments, the forgiveness programs are actually set up, because that's like a whole other part of it too, is that for me, one of the draws of entering public service was like, okay, after so many years, I can get my student loans forgiven. And I've had friends who are at that point now, after doing this, deciding that this is a career path that they wanted to do, who are not able to take advantage of that. So like even setting up, making sure that the systems that are already in place are actually beneficial. So yeah, I think those are some of the really, really the big ones. But I think for younger people in particular, like when I talk to my sister, who's a couple years younger, and then my cousins who are in Gen Z, the climate crisis is, they have existential dread, I feel like, every day, just kind of even thinking about it, and are really concerned and upset about that.
So the gas issue right now is in the minds of young folks, because mm-hmm. gas is high. And so people yes. are talking about drilling more here, mm-hmm. which is an issue. Mm-hmm. So people are very nearsighted. It's like, we need it now, and this is what we mm-hmm. need to do. We'll worry about what happens to the environment later, or mm-hmm. what happens to the budget later, and who's going to pay that back. Most of the people now, they'll be dead. It's like, mm-hmm. we'll be dead. Yeah. Like, it's no big deal. So it does fall back. Now, I will say, kind of going back to the student loan crisis, I believe that there should be some forgiveness. I agree with you that the program should work for the people, especially if you go in public service, if you're a teacher. It just mm-hmm. makes sense, because we need an educated workforce. And I think eventually schools, the price of college is going up. People will stop mm-hmm. going to college. Yeah. And we do need people to go to college, mm-hmm. despite the fact. But I do think that we should make it easier to file bankruptcy. So this causes an impact. So if you file bankruptcy, there is a consequence for doing right. that. And everyone's yep. not going to do that. So Joe, if you hear this, at least that, you know, if you're going to give, if you, at least that, because the interest is what's killing a lot of people.
Yes.
So when I'm looking at what's going on, and I know you say that for young people, student loans, which I could see, the environment also can see. What about Roe v. Wade? What about reproductive rights? Mm. Is this something that young people care about, or is it sort of like, it's not really impacting, or they don't see the connection from what you're hearing?
Yeah. So I definitely think so. I think that it has, unfortunately, it has been forced into the minds of a lot of people, particularly young people. So right after college, I worked at Planned Parenthood. Okay. And I was an organizer. And, you know, back then, this was like 2012, I want to say. Yeah, 2012. And 13, people really, a lot of people supported abortion rights, but they didn't necessarily think that there was anything to do, because they were protected.
Right.
And now, right, because of what is going on and what just happened with the Supreme Court decision, I think for the first time, a lot of people who were passively supporting of abortion rights are really having to confront being like, oh, wow, this is not a guarantee. And not only is the right to an abortion not a guarantee, this can really open up a lot of other things coming into question. And this is an issue that I need to focus on, because this is just like the first of many. And, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, it's wild to think about that I now have less rights than my mom did.
Yeah.
And what does that say about our society? And to me, again, like, I'm a Leo. I like astrology and all that. I'm a Leo. I fire sign. I have that fire energy. And I'm just like, all right, you want to do this? Like, I'm not going down without a fight. And that doesn't mean like violence, but it's just like, I'm not going to take this sitting down. I think it's so incumbent on all of us to really use our voices and speak out right now.
I agree with that. And I think that young people are starting to get a little bit more engaged, because yes, if this can be rolled back, You're looking at issues with contraception. You're looking at, you know, gay rights. And Clarence Thomas already has started making comments about those things. So we do need to watch out for that. And I think you're right. We were in a society for so long that things were protected that we didn't really think it was important to us. We didn't have to do anything. Now, when you look at this upcoming, because I'm concerned. I'm not going to lie to you. I am concerned when you are seeing the results come in. The only positive I think I've seen is that women, the female candidates are kicking ass and taking names. Even in the Republican Party, they're kicking ass. What do we need to do now? So if you are someone like me, we're on the outside. We're seeing that this is happening because we do need more people to run. I agree with you 100%. But right now, these are the candidates that we have. Should we sit this one out? Should we be out helping the candidates that we think are most, you know, qualified? Like, what should we be doing? Because right now, it's not a lot of great options.
No, that's totally fair. And I think right now, I am all for getting involved on campaigns, finding candidates that you support. And it doesn't just need to be for Congress, right? Like there's always, I always say there's always an election that's happening, even just one that you might not know about. So finding, going to the Secretary of State's website for your state, number one, making sure that you're registered to vote. I would say the first
number
thing,
one.
Right? Number one, making sure you're registered, and then making sure that people in your life are registered. So that's something I always do is like around election time, making sure I understand when the registration deadlines are, and then putting stuff on social media, being like, "Hey, I'm registered to vote. Here's a link where you can go to figure out if you're registered, and here's how to register." And then volunteering on campaigns, like there are so many different ways to volunteer and support campaigns. You don't have to just go out and knock on doors. I know some people really like that for canvassing. That's what that's called. But making phone calls, doing data entry too for people that are more introverted, but still want to help. Like that's a huge, huge, huge help. There are so many different ways that you can get active, even like talking to the campaign, reaching out if there are other things that they need. Like something that I always loved that volunteers would do would be like, okay, like I don't necessarily want to come in and knock on doors or make calls, but I would love to like start a meal train. So like going out and getting you guys like a Costco card so you can go out and like make sure that you guys are all fed on the campaign. Stuff like that makes such a huge difference. And then talking to people about the election too. So something I always do every year is right when the ballots get sent out. So in Washington State, it's a vote by mail state. But out here where in Maryland, in DC, where I would be going and going to like a polling location, right before all of that actually starts happening, I will go on like Instagram, and I'm gonna be doing this on my TikTok this year too, just being like, hey, anybody, if you have questions or if you want to talk about what's on the ballot, particularly the things that are under like president or under Congress that are harder to understand, like please reach out, like have a conversation about it too. Because I always try to encourage people to get as much information as they can so they fill out the entire ballot and not just the top. Because a lot of we have a lot of issues on the federal level, but there are states, I think about like Florida and Texas, who've been doing some really horrible things because they understand that people do not understand how like local elections and like local government operates and works. So we need to start having more conversations so that people are aware and be like, oh, this is actually really important too. And I need to be paying attention to this and voting on this as well.
Yes, I agree with that. I think a lot of people, they don't get educated enough to find out who is running and what they actually stand for. And then also, who is actually elected? Because a lot of people don't understand that either. Like when you're talking about a lot of the judges and people are like, how did they get there? Like you've got to do some research to find out that you do have some say so, especially on the local levels. The national one, a little shaky, but you definitely have a stronger voice locally. I guess this is my last thing for you. If you could run
or say anything to, you know, the, I guess any, the Democrats right now, since you are Democrat or voters, let's just take the Democrats out of it. Let's just say voters. If you could say anything to the voters right now about what's going on and try to wake them up and get their attention, what would it be?
Ooh. We are at a pivotal moment in our country's history where we have to decide the way that we want to go. And what we are facing in our opposition is a consolidation of power by any means necessary. They understand that their demographics are shrinking, that their approval ratings are shrinking, that they cannot win elections free and fair. And so they are doing everything in their power to implement laws that control and govern us the way that they see fit while they still can. And so it is incumbent that all of us right now decide that we will not allow that to happen, and that we will stay civically minded, civically engaged, regardless of the opposition that is put in front of us. And that is not a fair burden to place on our shoulders. It never has been, but that is the reality. And we are dealing with so much of this because we are making progress. This is an affront to the progress that we have made. And to young people as well, I would just like to remind them that some of the greatest advancements in American history have been made by people that were extremely young. Martin Luther King was in his 20s. The lawyer who argued for Roe v. Wade, I think that they were 28 years old. We have power. Just because you're young does not mean that you are not important, does not mean that you are not influential. It actually means that you're probably some of the most influential and important people in this country. And that, just don't forget that. It's time to step into our power and not to be afraid, because things will be hard, but we can do it.
That's actually a pretty good point. I wasn't even thinking about that. A lot of this is because you are making progress and they do not like it. Mm-hmm. They do not like change. So young people, make sure you go out there and you vote. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Whatever your positions are, you need to vote in your best interest. Right. I cannot tell you what that is, but just make sure you go out there and you do your research. How can people find you on TikTok, and how can people find you on all other social media?
Absolutely. Yes. So I am at Bree Deshaun. So that's at Bree.Deshaun on every single platform. I'm mostly on TikTok and Instagram, but that's at Bree.Deshaun on every platform.
Awesome. Thank you so very much. When you actually, you know, Google Black political commentators on TikTok, you are one of the ones that shows up. So I appreciate all the things that you do. Make sure you keep giving out great information to young folks and getting them involved. Much, much, much appreciated. And we do have some primaries coming up. Make sure you guys are engaged.
Yes.
Civically. We just need you engaged. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was so wonderful.